We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a description issued by Wiltshire Police requesting information from the public and read by Brian Perkins.
The attacker was wearing a bobble hat without a bobble.
Thanks to Gillian Hill of Salisbury for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Joe Brand. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and John Sargent. Jeremy, who's suffering a taxing time on the home front?
Tony Blair's going to put up taxes, he says, because the government can't find the money for the public services, so it gets a private company in. And the private company says, there's the money, you're sitting on it. So, oh, yeah, here it is, you can have it. And that's our punch. But they're going to put out the taxes on because there's a war on, and so they can. You can do anything when there's a war on. And the war against terrorism, they call it, the war against terrorism. This is the official title that's been given to it. You're supposed to wait, aren't you? The history books are supposed to decide what it's called. You can't just choose the name for your war. There's no evidence yet that it is a war against, it seems to be a war against shepherds and the Red Cross at the moment, but you're supposed to wait. I mean, at the start of the Hundred Years' War, they didn't, they thought, I thought, well, we'll see how it pans out, you know. Probably be over by Christmas, so they didn't think of a title, but it's called The War Against Terrorism, and very popular among lots of columnists in the papers, little flag wavers who say, I am so glad that we are doing what we are doing, and I am so proud of what we are doing, we, all the way home. You think, we, it's not you, is it? It's a columnist, you're not going to go, are you? And they say, well, we can't do nothing. And you think, well, you seem to have made a pretty good job of doing nothing for most of it. Let's look at your life. You get up, you shuffle into the office about 11, have a big coffee, check your emails, knock out a column and go to lunch. About it, really, if you're a columnist, isn't that? Except sometimes there's a bit of supply presenting in the summer when all the Radio 4 people are on holiday. Yeah.
Is there a war going on?
The war?
No, well, I thought we wouldn't be talking about the war, so I didn't read the first 10 pages of the paper. And then I thought, oh, well, I might as well not bother with the rest of it.
Nothing else is happening, thankfully.
No.
Nothing else is happening in the world, apart from the war against terrorism, or twat, as it's...
I wonder when Tony Blair is going to ask us to give up our railings and saucepans. My mother gave up all her saucepans to build a Spitfire. They never built one. You can't really build a Spitfire out of saucepans because they're bloody heavy. I mean, imagine a 40-ton aeroplane.
Isn't the key point in wartime, Alan? You don't wait to be asked.
I turn up with my saucepan.
Just put the saucepan
at number 10.
Yes, at number 10. Don't wait to be asked. That's typical of the sloppy attitude that we're trying to eradicate during the war.
That La Cruze, though, you could make a whole tank out of one of them.
Very good. It's claimed that the Prime Minister was trying to bury talk of possible tax hikes amid the news from America and Israel. This was denied by the PM's new special adviser, Joe Moore.
I hope that all her friends are taking the opportunity of her being traumatised and distracted to bury lots of bits of bad news, going, here, Joe, you know, I borrowed that dress off you. Well, I spilt red wine on it. I'm shagging your boyfriend. Is that okay? And she'll just go, what? Oh, yeah, fine, whatever.
Nobody's standing up for this woman at all, so even though I've got a terrible reputation for doing this, might I just suggest that she might just have had a touch of PMT or something?
There's a lot of envy involved, isn't there, from those people who still haven't worked out how to send emails. I thought it was a neat punishment, though. You know, in medieval times, you'd put someone in the stocks and throw eggs at them, whereas we think of the most fiendish torture, putting a spin doctor in front of the cameras. Apparently, if they're a real spin doctor, they shrivel up. She didn't, so she's kind of a witch, isn't she? So she put on a bonfire. I thought what was extraordinary was I began to feel sorry for a spin doctor. I'm sorry I confess this. Is that wrong?
Yes. That's wrong.
That is wrong,
thing
isn't
about
it? It's bad.
All these people who are supposed to be brilliant at public relations, like Mandelson and Max Clifford and Joe Moore and the Wessexes, everybody completely hates them. Which suggests they're not very good at public relations, really.
Joe, why is the gospel according to Dave no laughing matter?
According to Dave? Oh, because Dave Blunkett is planning to not allow people to do religious jokes anymore in some way or other. And Rowan Atkinson got quite upset about this and wrote to the Times. And I'm quite upset because I've got a cracking 40 minutes on the Druids. So we're not going to be able to do jokes on religion, possibly,
That's
anymore.
That's Rowan's spin on it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
It's supposed to be a law against religious hatred. Since all religions hate each other, it's a bit hard for them not to. But Rowan...
The Baptists and the Methodists quite like each other.
Do they?
Yeah.
Are they getting on?
Fairly well.
Right. The one thing you could never say in a holy war with Islam, you could never say, all right, we've all had a drink.
It's all about taste.
Reading is wonderful. There's a biography of Walter Matthau, just to show that you really can do anything. It's a true story. It's a true off-the-cuff response by Matthau. He and his wife, Carol, in 1988, they're both Jewish, they were doing a tour of the concentration camps. They'd seen all the concentration camps. They were travelling in style because they were immensely rich. And they'd been to Buchenwald, and they'd been to Bergen-Belsen, and they'd been to Dachau. And they arrived at Oswegheim at a hotel to see Auschwitz. And they got up in the morning at about 10, because the car was coming at 10:30. And it didn't come. And they waited 11, the car didn't come. And at 11:30, Matthau rang the desk. And he said, where's my car? And they said, we're terribly sorry, Mr. Matthau. We wanted to have a limousine, because you're a great star, and we couldn't get it, and the car won't be here until 12 o'clock. And Matthau said, well, I want you to know one thing. You've ruined Auschwitz for me.
In a letter to the Times, Rowan Atkinson raised fears that David Blunkett's new anti-terrorism bill could prevent comedians and satirists making jokes about religion. Religious leaders from across the spectrum joined together to oppose the new law on Thursday, when a rabbi, a priest and a nun walked into a bar. John, which ex-soldier was granted permission to speak, sir, at Westminster this week?
Ah, Ian Duncan Smith. Yes, this is his debut in Prime Minister's Questions. I wasn't there to witness this, I'm afraid. I was elsewhere engaged. But I was told what happened was that he said, this is the first question, Prime Minister, is it fair to compare you favourably with Winston Churchill during the Second World War? And Tony Blair apparently said, if you must say that. I mean, I don't think this is going to last. I mean, I would have thought he'll have to get his claws out at some point, but so far at the moment, he's jolly keen to show how well the government are doing, which is surprising for an opposition, but there we are.
He's got this military perfunctory thing, hasn't he, IDS, Irritable Duncan Syndrome. Because he doesn't do any of that, because old, what's his name, went in for all the gangs. It was like, here's another one, lady. But he just gets up and sort of says, war, very good, first rate. Bombing, good. Smashing, excellent. Health service, not so good. Recommend bombing the health service. Carry on. And that's sort of it. But people sort of say, oh, Blair's doing marvellously well, isn't he? And he's more popular, and Rudy Giuliani and Bush, they're all more people saying, oh, well, they've reacted. Well, what do you expect them to do? They're politicians. I mean, half of a politician's job is just pulling the right face at the right time, which is why Robin Cook had to go, because you can never tell what he was doing.
Ian Beckinsmith made his Prime Minister's Question Time debut as opposition leader, introducing his dad's army-style catchphrase, they don't like it, Mr. Speaker, they do not like it. Any comparison between the Conservative Party and dad's army would be mistaken. After all, one is the tale of a ramshackle bunch of clapped-out old men led by a stiff-necked, pompous ass, and the other is constantly repeated by the BBC. 2 points to John. Alan, who has been shanghaied by the war?
Oh, right. I mean, this is St. George. This is the great crusader. And this time he's gone to cozy up to the Chinese dragon. George Bush has gone to Shanghai to drag the Chinese into a coalition against terrorism. This is wonderful, this reformation. I suppose they could have sent Prince Philip. That would have been a small anyway, they sent him to Shanghai. I didn't know they were part of the coalition until I saw he was going to China. The great thing about these coalitions and the soft footing is that they a drawing back from bombing the Taliban front lines, because if they wipe out the Taliban, then the Northern Alliance will get to Kabul in time to set up their own government before our soft one, you know, before we're able to parachute in Shirley Williams and Jonathan Porritt and people like that. It's madness.
I think W has just been evacuated till the war's over by his parents. They sent him to live with an old gentleman who's got a magical wardrobe. It's just got no sense of geography. That's what's, it's worrying, having a man who has difficulty with words. They've just sent him out of Washington, and he's saying, what does this button do? No, don't touch it. Just go to China. Just... I mean, I live in a terrorist house, and I'm worried about that, you know.
George W. Bush is attending the Asia-Pacific Economic... George Bush is attending the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation
Forum. Very good impression of George Bush's oratorical style.
I didn't know you did impress. This is translated from the Chinese, Anna.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you criticiser in me. President Bush has a lot in common with his Chinese counterpart, President Jiang Zemin, as neither of them were democratically elected. We start round two with a sign seen on a public toilet in Minehead. These toilets are locked from dusk until early morning. In case of an emergency, ring 643-707-210. Thanks to Ron Bridle of Paracombe Barnstaple for sending that. Jeremy, listen to this. This is dedicated to the one I love. This is dedicated. Jeremy, why are mamas and papas down, man?
Oh, I didn't follow this properly, but this is parents. We're demoralised at the moment. I'm demoralised. I tell you what's demoralising is when your 11-year-old gets to the top of the stairs and says, now, what did I come up here for? That's And when she says, talk to the hand because the face don't understand... that we're demoralised because there's no advice. You don't know what to do. One lot of people go on Woman's Hour, like these people from the Institute of Letterheaded Paper and those people. And it's all children should be allowed to play with knives. It makes them hard. And then on the other hand, there's people telling you, you know, we're not careful enough. And there's no advice in those books. See, Joe just had a baby and you've just read all the books. They
I
stop
haven't.
At two. You haven't read any?
No, I've been drunk, I'm afraid.
Ah, good idea. That's a good idea. But these books, they stop at two. They go on and on
two
about...
Two pages or age two?
Age two.
Right.
Age two. They have about 100 pages. And then they... well, you can, that can be varied. It depends on the author. I wouldn't want to generalise. But... But it's all about, you know, sterilising bottles and a lot of stuff about conception and weaning and all that stuff. And then it says, and then your baby gets to, and then they kind of grow up and there's puberty and stealing and drugs and then they put you in a home and it'll be fine, trust us. And you're completely on your own and you don't know what the hell to do with them. They go all hairy and mad and their heads can turn around 360 degrees and they projectile vomit.
I quite like the sound of hairy and mad. Yeah. That sounds good. I hope mine does. What age can I expect this charming thing to happen?
Depends what you feed them.
Right.
If you give them plenty of very cheap cuts of beef, it's about four.
A lot of the fun of parenting has been removed, hasn't it? You can't smack them, you can't hit them at all. You have to reason with them. You can't make them go to their room. You can't even force them to write thank you letters.
I'm around too much. That's my trouble as a dad, because I don't have a job. If you don't have a job, you're one of the dads in the playground, because she's secondary school now, but at primary school, we'd go to the playground, and when she wasn't still embarrassed yet, and you go to the playground, and all the women think you're nice, because you're a bloke, and you're the only bloke, and they think, oh, isn't it sad? Oh. And they assume your wife is dead, mad, or in prison. Proper dads, it's kind of like divorcees or uncles, because they just work all the time, don't see their kids much, and then put in a lot of effort on a Saturday. And you see them at the swimming baths, and I can't swim. And you see all the proper dads in the pool, and I've always tried to be the sharing, caring dad, you know, explains everything and never lays down the law, so consequently my daughter treats me with contempt. So I'll be in the swimming baths, and there's all the proper dads splashing about, saying, oh, I'm the big crocodile, I'm going to bite you in the bum. And they love that, kids. They're all scared and splashing, but not really scared. Oh, I'm going to bite you in the bum, big crocodile. Ah! It's all fun and lovely and brilliant. And there's me and my daughter sitting on the side of me saying, so is there anything about swimming you'd like to discuss at all?
It's survey for the National Families and Parents Institute, whatever that is, decided that parents were demoralised raising children, especially teenagers. Parents said they found the teenage years to be the most difficult, especially if you're trying to revise for your GCSEs and the kids are screaming at you all day long. 2 points to Jeremy. Joe, why are an infinite number of monkeys no longer required to write the works of Shakespeare?
Oh, I think I read this on page 12 of something. is it because... Oh, I can't really remember. My brain is like mashed potato. In fact, I wish I could have some mashed potato.
I think brains are like mashed potato, aren't they?
Grey mashed potato.
Like grey mashed potato. Have you seen a brain?
Yes.
Because you used to be a mental nurse, didn't you?
I did.
I don't mean like, you know... No. I'm a nurse.
No, but that's actually what they called us, mental nurses. But I quite like that, because I was a bit. Yes, I have seen a brain.
Did you get them out to play with them? or would that be unethical?
No, I wasn't at work. It was after an incident in the pub.
Oh, dear.
It wasn't really. When's your wife coming out of prison? something to do with monkeys being capable of abstract thinking and being able to understand sequencing when they're using computers.
Hmm.
How intelligent does that sound?
I didn't understand the article. I tried reading. Yeah. I didn't follow it.
You should have read the one in the Mirror about it. It's quite easy and straightforward.
Yeah, the Mirror is produced by baboons and computers.
I can't remember who said this. It wasn't me. It was another comedian. I don't want to nick their joke. But he said, I'm sorry, whoever it was, that if you gave monkeys typewriters, eventually they would write, "Hey, hey, we're the monkeys." Great.
I'd nick it if I were you.
I think I will.
Yeah.
Can you edit out the bit where I said it to someone else? That'd be great.
Two baboons trained to use a personal computer have shown they're capable of abstract thought, a trait usually only attributed to human beings, chimpanzees, and George W. Bush. Initially, the baboons had a lot of problems figuring out how to work the computers, but that's Microsoft for you. Alan, who can you trust to spend $750,000 on slumming it in Birmingham?
It's not about that place outside Scunthorpe, Ouseley.
Oh, I read that one.
It's
well.
Great, that story. Yes, it's the dullest place in Britain.
Yes.
It's where they record the Moral Maze. $750,000 in Birmingham?
Yes.
Has someone bought a slum in Birmingham?
Mm.
I think Jeremy knows.
You are the team captain now.
You are my deputy. I'm going to China.
All right.
I'm leaving you in charge of the panel.
All right. I'm now the president of our side, and I can reveal that this is the National Trust plan to buy a back-to-back slum in Birmingham and turn it into a national treasure. And they're going to... you know how in National Trust properties they serve very expensive teas and things? Well, they're going to serve bread and dripping and a mug of tea. And it'll still be £3.70.
Is there going to be a little red rope to stop you going into the private bits of the slum?
Four deprived, decaying back-to-back houses in Birmingham are being restored into a museum of working-class domestic life by the National Trust at a cost of £750,000. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Nottingham Evening Post. A man who tried to swallow heroin that was found between his buttocks in a police search has been sent to prison for 3 years. A jury had previously cleared the man of a similar charge relating to crack cocaine. Thanks to Jamie Gordon of Nottingham for that. Joe, who clawed their way to freedom, proving that size does matter?
Was it a cat of some sort?
Not quite.
Right.
The size matters and claws?
Yes.
My lawyers.
Huh?
My sisters are called Size Matters and Claws.
I don't know, actually. Do you know, Jeremy?
I don't know.
It's a lobster,
yes.
It is actually my age, exactly my age. Isn't it?
Really?
Yeah.
60 years old.
No.
No?
You shouldn't have told him that.
38. No, this is a lobster called Barney, who, over 60 years, roughly, grew to be 3 foot wide. And he was caught in the summer,
and a very nice chef felt sentimental about this. First thought was, this can make gallons and gallons of lobster soup. Second thought was, what a lovely creature, how can we possibly put it into the bath of hot water?
Third thought was, it's 60 years old, and I know, because I'm that age myself, it's going to taste like rubber. You can't eat a lobster that big.
But
it can eat you.
Alan, if it tastes like rubber, you should take it off.
So what they did was they took Barney.
No, that time.
They took Barney to the London Aquarium, and he got very morose because he wanted to star in the Blue Planet. And having failed at this dream, they then let him loose a few days ago off the coast of Devon.
Mm-hmm.
John, and he was last seen walking towards a cliff.
How do you know so much about this lobster?
About lobsters. I happen to be a lobster expert. I'm the lobster editor of ITN. Just imagine this 3-foot lobster with no mate, far too big, everyone laughing at it down there, wondering why it's so ungainly, and wondering why it's not lobster bisque in a London restaurant.
John, take the drugs out of your bum, you're absorbing them.
Barney, a Homarus gamarus, more than 3 foot long, is the second largest lobster ever caught. The largest was caught off the coast of America in 1977 and was worth over $3,000. That's just for starters.
I used to like that lobster paste. Did they still sell those pastes?
Lobster
I love those pastes. They're all exactly the same. Just slightly different shades of brown. Ooh, posh today, we're having lobster paste. Ooh. Normally in the week you just have beef paste or dripping paste or something like that. In the morning you'd have some cereal paste. But for posh Sunday tea you'd have lobster paste. And if you'd bought enough jars you could fashion a lobster out of it. Just get mixing a bit of sand and cement with a trowel and make a whole paste lobster. Yeah, good.
All those pastes were made out of the stuff that's thrown away. You know when you get a prawn and it's 2 eyes and 14 legs and stuff that gets under your nails, which are probably its testicles or unborn children. That is the stuff they use in the paste. It's all that junk. It's like when you have fish soup in France. It's all the junk that actually should be thrown away. It's prawn testicles and eyeballs and ears and things, and that's what it is. And
it's quite nice, though, isn't it?
It's terrific.
That's what they do with those no-frills things in supermarkets. They just get that paste and they can make it into cornflakes and toilet paper and everything. Just different moulds they put it in.
Alan, your piece of music. Walk the Dinosaur by Was Not Was. Alan, which theory claims that one particular dinosaur's natural habitat should have been the east upper side of Manhattan?
I've been doing the news quiz since dinosaurs walked the earth, and every third week, I suppose, is a question about dinosaurs. They found a big bit or an old bit or a smelly bit, or, you know, this dinosaur was actually Judy Garland. And I think this is the one this week, which is Tyrannosaurus Rex, which wasn't mean or difficult at all. It actually suffered from various diseases and hemorrhoids, and it was neurotic and wasn't a bastard at all. It was just misunderstood. And it had irritable bowel syndrome, and its mother had been rude to it, and it acted the way it did because they'd spent 14 million years bringing it up and still got it wrong. That's parenthood for you.
Now, it was just quoted out of context. I mean, I blame the reporters.
Yes.
It's a little gentle...
It's Tyrannosaurus bin Rex, is why he...
Bin Rex. Lived in a cave, wouldn't hurt anybody.
Exactly.
The American paleontologist Robert Baker claims T-Rex was in fact a large Woody Allen character, angst-ridden and nervous, with cuts all over its body. Just like all the other species of dinosaurs, T-Rex was wiped out when a comet struck the Earth, though he was the only one to have spent the previous 15 years lying awake at night worrying that it might happen. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
Yes, now this is sent in by David Rees-Tyler of Bromley, and it's from Connex's in-house trademark, Connex, the private train company.
and it says our new class 375 trains, which we have invested in to replace slam door trains on many Connex routes, are now being tested. The air-conditioned trains are making test journeys between Ramsgate and Gillingham in gaps between normal Connex services. This testing must be carried out to iron out any safety or technical issues and make sure the trains are ready to carry passengers before they can start their 200,000-mile endurance test.
Joe.
This is from someone called Alan Bonella, who says, this is an advert he's cut out for a death notification clerk. And it says, we are seeking enthusiastic individuals who have good communication skills and enjoy working as part of a team to join us. You'll also need a good sense of humour.
John.
This is a rather sad letter of complaint to a newspaper. Thank you for printing our letter regarding Hedgehog Awareness Week in the Northwich Chronicle, dated April the 25th. However, there was a rather unfortunate error in our name. As you can see, we are the British Hedgehog Preservation Society, and you printed British Hedgehog Prevention Society.
Alan.
Well, I'm doing this one, Simon, only because in those 25 years of doing the news quiz, I've never done a cutting duet, but I have to for this one. It's from Tuesday's Daily Telegraph, and to assist me later on in the cutting, I shall use the Radiant Perkins, who is the world's most famous New Zealander. And it says, an earthquake in New Zealand's North Island yesterday shook a hill with the world's longest name.
Ah, that place. Tamata whakatangi hanga kawa wawa tamatea pokai whenua kitina tahu.
Terrific.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Jeremy and Joe have 11 points. Alan and John, this week's winners, with 14. And before we leave you, here's a label seen on the back of a bottle of Gewürztraminer wine, drunk by John Sutherland of Williston. A wine of great finesse with a spicy complex pulet and a bint of sweet knickers. Serve chilled as an aperitif or to accompany lightly spiced tools. With that, goodbye! Taking part in the news quiz, Alan Torren, Jeremy Hardy, Joe Brown and John Sargent. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Tom Jameson, Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.